This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Etopia Media's Entertainment Technology World. We're about to speak to Bill Aho, who is the CEO of Clearplay in Salt Lake City, Utah. Welcome to Etopia Media's Entertainment Technology World.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Tell us briefly what you did before you created Clearplay.
Well, I've spent most of my life in large companies. Started my career in Procter & Gamble in brand management in Cincinnati, and spent almost 10 years with PepsiCo.
So you know a lot about consumer demand.
Well, it's been 20 years in marketing and general management, but in consumer-driven businesses, right.
Okay. Where did the idea for Clearplay come from to you? Was there an aha moment, or did it gradually creep up on you?
Well, actually, the product was conceived by a guy named Matt Jarman, and he and his brother decided to follow up on this idea that they had back in the late 90s.
Right.
And the notion was that it was clear that movie content was getting edgier and edgier, and that families were uncomfortable with that, and for the first time, digital technology, and specifically DVDs, allowed you to go in and control that and how it was experienced in the home.
Right.
And so they worked with some engineers, put together a product that could run on computers and PCs,
right,
and that was the beginning of Clearplay.
Okay. And so essentially its goal from the beginning has been to take the edge off.
Well, I think it's been to give families another option, to allow them to sort of customize that experience with the content that they're uncomfortable with, whether it's sex or violence or profanity or all of the above, and even subcategories within those. You make the choice.
Okay. For you, has the issue of promoting Clearplay been which of these has been predominant, or what kind of mix has there been between among the technical challenge, the cultural issues, and the commercial opportunity?
You know, that's a very good question. Certainly the technology has been something that we spent a lot of time with, and we continue to do to get it better, because if you don't have a product that people are happy with,
right,
that they feel like, wow, that was a great movie, and it wasn't choppy, and it wasn't, and I didn't feel like I missed anything, and
right,
if you don't get that right, then you don't have a concept. And so we have spent a lot of time on that, and the feedback that we've gotten has been absolutely terrific.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Tell us how Clearplay works and how it's ported to a system and how people get it and all those questions.
Sure. You get a DVD player that has a Clearplay feature on it. The best way to do that is to go to our website at clearplay.com, and we have a product, an RCA product, on there now. We have two more products coming out in actually June and July. And what you do once you have this player is you get a DVD from Blockbuster or Best Buy or Walmart, wherever you buy from.
Before we get to the content, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the technology. You've essentially contracted with RCA to build the DVD players.
Well, not exactly.
How does that work?
RCA licensed our technology to put it on their player.
All right.
Now,
and
we also have a player coming out under our brand name, and then we have another manufacturer that has licensed us, and that product will be out in July.
Okay, and does the Clearplay capability reside in a chip in firmware which is installed in the DVD player?
Yeah, think about it as a firmware addition to an existing chip. Every DVD player is powered by a chip, and we simply write to that chip in the same way that, say, you'd have to find a Dolby 5.1 or a Progressive Scan.
Okay, so the ability to play to use the Clearplay filters then is built into the hardware of the DVD player.
That's exactly right.
Okay, and then how are the DVDs labeled or categorized or prepared for use by individual consumers?
Well, we create a filter that's unique to each movie.
Okay.
And as the DVDs are released, we will have filters out within the next 2 days. Typically, they're released on Tuesday. We have filters available for the weekend.
So tell us how that works. You go over to Blockbuster and buy one? Or
we do it just like everybody else. We'll buy them first thing in the morning, Tuesday morning.
Right.
And then we have a team of people that work to create a filter. And the filter basically goes through and identifies all of this content in our 14 different categories, and then it creates a template that tells the player to skip or mute from one frame to another for each one of those events.
So essentially, you create a list, a database of events, either video or audio, and they're cataloged then in a database, and then what's the contribution of, and two things. So does this exist as software or as a chip or as a
file? It's a small
file.
Yes, it's a small file.
What format is the file in, or what? Does it have its own particulars? Is it a Word file or what?
No, it's our own format.
Oh, it's your own format. Mm-hmm. Okay. And how many, do you have one person watching the whole movie? Do you have 10 people each watching 10 minutes?
We've got a team of about 10 people
right.
who do movies. And it's a combination of, typically one person will start with a movie and go through it. Somebody will QA it. Somebody will go back and do fixes and changes and improvements and until we get it to where we feel like the customer is going to be very happy with it.
Do you have multiple people doing the same movie and then comparing them to see what kind of results they've got? Or
sometimes. It may depend on the movie. Typically what will happen is one person will do it, somebody different will QA it, and then a third person may come in and actually go through it again.
Okay. Are the decisions about what to include on that database and what to and how to categorize them, is it often an iffy gray area kind of thing, or is it always pretty clear according to the criteria that you've set out whether a particular bit of audio or a particular bit of video falls into a certain category?
Well, we try to make it as clear as possible. Occasionally, there's some ambiguity. I mean, there's some things that are very easy. For instance, an F word is an F word.
Right.
And we know what it sounds like, and if you don't want to listen to F words, you click the F word setting on your player,
right.
and they'll be muted out,
right.
or skipped in some cases.
Right.
There are some areas that get a little bit fuzzy. For instance, in crude language, if somebody says, call someone a butthead, you
right.
know, is that crude language or not?
Right.
You know, so occasionally we have these gray areas where we have to go and set policy. And
does that involve context? Take that example to be precise. Does that count as crude language or not as crude language, or is it on a sliding, or do you label it on a sliding scale of 1 to 10, and it's a 4?
I think in some of those things, yes, it would involve context. And I think you can often say the word, based on our crude language filter, I think you can typically say the word butt. I mean, certainly when you say, you know, nice, my butt hurts, I think we wouldn't filter that. And on the other hand, I think there are situations where it may fall under crude language depending upon context.
Okay.
That would be one of those gray areas. I mean, some are very simple, hell and damn. I mean, they are what they are.
Right. Now, you mentioned muting and skipping. What's the difference, and how does that distinction figure into what you do?
Well, a mute is when just simply the audio track
right.
is stopped, and a skip is when you move from one frame to another on a video track.
Okay. And what determines whether you would do that one or the other?
That would depend upon what works best in that particular situation. I mean, for instance, if someone was facing camera
right.
and saying a profanity and everybody could read their lips,
right.
we'd prefer to skip that.
Okay.
In that situation, but it all depends upon what's needed to follow the storyline and those kinds of things.
Okay.
So it really is. We try to make it as clinical as possible, but actually making those decisions tends to be something that we've really developed over time and tends to be artistic.
Okay. I want to talk about this more later on, but maybe you could say a little bit about it now. Continuity and understanding the storyline, and to what extent are you aware of or worry about or concentrate on avoiding making it possible to have cuts that render the story meaningless or unintelligible?
Well, we go through a quality assurance process with every movie where someone watches it cold with all the ClearPlay filter settings on,
right.
and looks for things that we might have missed, but also looks specifically for, does everything make sense?
Right.
Did I follow this? Do I feel good about the movie? And
right.
if not, we go back, and if we can't get it right, we won't release the filter for it.
Because someone mentioned in some of the research I did here that the first scene of Proof of Life, which involves the kidnapping, I haven't seen the movie, but apparently it involves the kidnapping around which the rest of the movie is centered, is excluded under certain preferences and rendering the movie pointless.
Yeah,
is that a problem?
That's simply not the case. I would invite anybody
right.
to go and watch Proof of Life with ClearPlay, I will tell you that you will not have any problem knowing exactly what happened. I think we took maybe 7 seconds out of that, and there's a scene when bullets are spraying people on motorcycles and
right.
getting blown off and shot, but so you miss some of that, but But it's very clear that this person, that Russell Crowe, or not Russell Crowe, but it's very clear that this person has been kidnapped. There's no question about that.
The operative word here must be gratuitous. Gratuitous sexuality, gratuitous violence. In other words, stuff that's not necessary for the development of the story. Is that, would that be a fair statement?
I'm not going to go that far and say that it's necessarily gratuitous.
Okay.
I mean, you can decide what's gratuitous or what's not, and why it was put in. The point is that in your home, when you're watching that movie, would you rather hear it with the F word or not? You know,
right.
If someone says, "What the blank are you doing here?" I don't know if that's gratuitous or not. I know that when I'm watching with my 13-year-old and it's, say, a PG-13 movie, I would rather not hear that. I'd rather hear, "What are you doing here?"
Okay. Focus on the synergy between what you do and what the consumer does in the home once you've prepared the filter.
I'm sorry. What do you mean by that?
What's the division of labor between what you do and what the customer,
well,
what the viewer does?
We categorize things according to 14 different settings, and the consumer then chooses those settings. And again, let's say it's harsh vulgarities.
Right.
You know, so you and when you said it says like the F, you know, asterisk.
Right.
So you would check that. And then what would happen is when it came to those words, it would skip or mute them. You wouldn't hear those words when you watch the movie.
Okay.
But that would be your decision.
All right. Talk about the lawsuit that has been brought against ClearPlay. What were the origins of it, and what's the current status of it?
Well, the lawsuit was brought originally by the Directors Guild of America.
Right.
And by... 15 prominent directors against companies that edit movies. They edit and make copies of them, and they sell them via particular either retail outlets or they may sell them over the web.
Do you have any view about that process and whether that's a good idea, bad idea?
You know, I don't. I think one thing is it's clearly a lot more limited. I mean, we find most of our customers would rather go to a Blockbuster or to Best Buy where they have a lot of options than go to a small retail where they don't have as many options.
Right,
so,
okay.
I mean, I think the concept is much less scalable than what we do, certainly, but the legality of it, they'll have to argue that. I'm not a constitutional attorney.
Okay.
I know it's a very different legal issue than ours.
Right. Okay, so the suit was brought originally against these people who sell edited versions of the films.
And the suit expanded, and eventually they sort of cast a wide net, and they said, hey, we're going to take on anybody in this category, and I think the intent was that we're just going to shut them all down because we're big, and they're not.
About when did that happen? When did you become a party to the suit?
September of 2002.
Okay. And did it cost you a lot of money to defend against that?
It's cost us a lot. It's cost us a lot of money. It cost us a lot of momentum. It's cost us deals. It's cost us relationships. It's cost us the ability to raise money. It's been... it has been absolutely onerous.
Okay, now I'm going to link to a copy of the testimony that you prepared and delivered, I think, in 2002 in front of a congressional committee.
2004, I believe.
Or 2004, okay. And what was the gist of what you said then? And what impact do you think that had in generating the Family Entertainment and Copyright Act of 2005?
Well, basically, I explained to a subcommittee of Congress how technologies like ClearPlay worked, and the fact that I think they were very interested in making sure that this was a technology they felt comfortable with, that it didn't alter DVDs, that it didn't fool consumers.
Did you provide demonstrations for the members of the panel?
You know, I think they did some for staff, and I showed some members of the panel at various times, but that wasn't part of the hearing.
Okay, and then what role, if any, did you play in helping to get that legislation passed that I just mentioned?
Well, we were in favor of it, and we supported it, and we tried to express our opinions to elected officials where we had the opportunity, but it was really Congress that drove that bill. It was Congressman Lamar Smith and others that pushed it, and Like I said, we were in favor of it and we supported it, but it's not our bill.
Were you involved at all in the negotiations that led to the apparently, now you mentioned that the parties to this lawsuit were the Directors Guild of America and 13 separate directors, individual directors. Were the Hollywood studios behind a plaintiff in that suit as well?
Yeah, the suit started with the directors, and then when it expanded to include, at the director's request, the studios, who are the copyright holders.
Right.
And they argued to the courts that this was essentially a copyright case, and so the copyright holders had to be involved. That was at the same time that we were included.
So, right.
Yes, it did include, it quickly evolved to include us and all the studios.
Now, the final resolution of the legislation, which included the act, the Family Entertainment Act that essentially legalized what you do, also includes provisions that sharply increase and federalize the crime of videotaping in theaters and other kind of piracy activities. And the studios, which didn't seem to be very happy about the ClearPlay provision, but were very adamant that they get the anti-pirating parts in, went along with that. Were you involved in any of the discussions, negotiations, or horse trading that led to the particular configuration that the bill finally took when it was passed?
No, signed? Really not at all. I mean, I'm not, you know, we're not political insiders, and I think that we were just there as always as sort of experts on the technology, having a company that works in the industry, and then we did, once we saw the bill and realized that it was something that we obviously could support, and then we lobbied and did our best to try to help get it passed.
Was Orrin Hatch, who's the senator from your state, pivotal in the whole process?
Well, he introduced it in the Senate, so yes.
Okay. Do you work with him very closely?
Do I work with Senator Hatch?
At all? Have you? Do you have?
I've met Senator Hatch on several occasions. I wouldn't say that I've worked with him closely.
Okay. There's a company called Ink Inc., which is playing up the fact that they help provide you with media counseling for this. What role did they play in the whole process?
You know, Inc. was terrific. They are a PR firm out of Kansas City, but they have. They have representatives in major metros all around the country and veteran people that really did a nice job of sort of telling our story and expanding the publicity for our company, both as part of the Family Movie Act, but also separate from it. Yeah, they did a great job. You know, I've spent a lot of years in consumer products and worked with some big PR agencies, and there's something to be said for that. But this is a small agency that really just knows how to go out and get the results. And we've been on, I think just yesterday, I was going through an airport and I saw a piece on our company on CNN. And the next thing I know, I'm interviewed. Too bad nobody else was there to see it.
Right, it fell in.
I was on it. I mean, I was the only one in that little terminal. And then I ran into, I saw the piece again on Headline News later in the day. I mean, they've just done a great job of getting us lots of press.
Now, what can you tell us that we don't know already about the status of the lawsuit? All of the articles have said, with the passage of the Family Entertainment and Copyright Act of 2005, that this case is, you're free and clear legally. Are you? Has the case been dropped? Is it still pending? What's the situation?
I think the case will continue, but I think that we will be dropped from the suit. How that happens is yet to be determined, whether the studios and directors sort of voluntarily do it, whether it requires a brief. I'm really not certain. We haven't had time to fully assess that and understand it. But I think it's safe to say that everybody that we've talked to, and even people that were antagonistic to the bill, acknowledged that this would put an end to the litigation, that at least companies like ClearPlay that did not edit movies and make copies of them, and that it would put an end to that Hollywood suit for us.
So you're pretty confident that you're out of the legal woods now?
Certainly, with that suit, I think it's safe to say that suit, as it exists, it will be a thing of the past.
Okay, talk a little bit about the aesthetics about this, and whether you are also confident that people watching movies that have been subject to the ClearPlay process are going to be aesthetically appealing as they were before they were.
I think it depends on what you want. You know, I don't have any delusions that you go to your typical frat house and they probably don't want to sit around watching it with ClearPlay.
Right.
On the other hand...
if we can indulge in some stereotyping, can fraternity people or others who revel in vulgarity use this system to dirty it up or to eliminate the non-objectionable parts?
No, they can't. We are strictly in the parental control business, and so you know there are plenty of industries that sell edgy content. Mars is not one of them.
Okay. Now I've done some interviews about digital cinema. Digital cinema allows studios to save a lot of money, they hope, in the long run by distributing their films digitally over the internet or secure versions of the internet and then displaying them with digital projection. I guess there are provisions in the Family Entertainment and Copyright Act of 2005 that prohibit the use of your technology in exhibition halls. Is there?
Well,
and in other words, what I'm saying, digital projection essentially allows for the projection of DVDs on huge screens, and I'm wondering whether you have any interest or there's been any interest expressed by others in using your technology in theaters.
I think that would be a public performance, and that would not be covered under the bill.
In fact, the bill...
That would only happen, I believe, with the agreement of the content holders. I'm not certain of that. I'd have to talk to lawyers, but I don't believe that that is covered under the legislation.
Okay, speaking of the content holders, has there been any movement that you're aware of by the studios now to sort of undercut you by doing this themselves?
We haven't seen that, no. I mean, they've talked about that, and they've sort of flirted with it for years, but we haven't seen it. One of the problems with that is that the studios will never be able to offer the kind of consumer control
right.
that ClearPlay offers. They'll never you can literally create 16,000 different variations.
Right, so there's no way they're going to offer 16,000 versions, but your technology allows there to be 16,000 different versions.
Yes. Well, no, I wouldn't say versions. You can watch it 16,000 different ways. You've got all these different categories. And, in fact, we see that. Some people are, highly sensitive to certain kinds of language, and others are not. Some people really don't care about language at all but are very sensitive to violence. And so it's really the problem that the studios have is when they try to create even TV versions. I mean, people are offended by them. Our customers tell us all the time that, wow, I mean, this is so much better than TV versions. And in Hollywood, they kind of look at the TV version and say, well, gee, that's fine. The mindset of Hollywood has always been, I'm going to fight with the airline or the TV guys and try to get as much content in there as I possibly can. And that's just not the mindset that it takes to be successful with customers that want filtered movies.
Okay, talk about the pricing and other arrangements that are involved in people who want to subscribe to your... It's a service that people subscribe to once they've got the DVD player, right?
Right. Well, you can get it in a package. I mean, right now you can go to our website and for $150 you could get a ClearPlay DVD player and an annual subscription to all the new filters that come out. And do that for $150.
Do you also get all the filters that already exist?
Yes, for $150.
So okay. And how many of those are there?
We have filters for over 1,300 movies.
Okay. And how fast are you turning out new ones?
We do probably 50 or more a month.
Okay. At least one or two a day. Then.
Yeah.
Okay. And how do people get the updates?
Well, it's in a variety of ways. With this new player that came out, it actually works pretty cool. You've seen little USB jump drives.
Right.
We're all familiar with those.
Right.
Basically, you get with the player, you get a USB jump drive, and you stick that into your PC or your laptop.
Right.
And set it up for the first time, and once you set it for the first time, then you just put it in, press a button, and if you're connected to the web, it'll go get all the filters from the ClearPlay site and load them on. Then you simply stick it into the front of your ClearPlay DVD player, and put the movie in, and you're ready to go.
Okay.
The movie actually will go find it from the jump drive, load it up into the flash memory of the player, and play it.
Are you worried, and are you taking any steps to avoid people using peer-to-peer networks to illegally pirate and distribute these filters?
I think every software manufacturer is concerned about it, and every software manufacturer is scratching their head wondering, well, what can I really do to stop this?
Okay. Is your system portable to portable DVD players, to video cell phones?
I don't know about cell phones. It all depends upon the the chip. And I haven't seen cell phones that are playing movies yet, although we're getting awfully close.
There are cell phones that play short video clips.
Short clips, yeah.
There's VK.
We haven't really worked with the chips in cell phones yet, but we have looked at a lot of and talked to a lot of companies that are interested in portables. And absolutely, we can work with those.
Because
I think you'll see that. I think you'll see that in the market over the next year.
Because, in fact, there are trends towards younger and younger people having more and more cell phones, and there's a trend towards putting content that appeals to them on cell phones. So I guess, I guess the parents are paying for the cell phones. Are you worried, optimistic, focusing on that market as something?
I think that's a pretty minor market for us. I'll tell you, there's another product that that's coming out through a company called MaxPlay.
Right.
And they make content filters for ISPs, but they're introducing a player with a modem. And the ClearPlay technology, and that one, you just connect. Somebody's sort of a technophobe,
right?
Doesn't want to download anything from their computer. They just stick. It's like the back of a TiVo. You know, you stick your telephone cord in, and you stick it into a jack in the wall,
right?
And the filters will load automatically for you.
Okay.
And so we have a variety of solutions. You can burn it onto a CD if you want, and stick them in and play it. So
right.
Any way the data is sent, we can send our filter files onto a player.
Okay. Now that's what I want to ask about the. It's principally designed for DVD, but there's a company called Movie Link, which is a consortium of the Hollywood studios.
I'm familiar with them. Yes, really?
And they've just signed an agreement with Verizon, and I'm hoping to do an interview with somebody there as soon as I can. And they will be downloading films to people through the Verizon network.
The Verizon just spent $5-6 billion putting in, right?
Right, and so will your technology be able to work on films that are distributed through the internet rather than on DVD?
Yes. The technology is adaptable to virtually any type of device.
Okay. Does that also mean that it would be possible to use it to filter news programs? Let's take CNN or Fox News.
Only if we created a filter for it, and that's not on our agenda.
Okay. Can other people create filters for other films that you haven't done by licensing your technology or otherwise piggybacking on your developments?
No.
You're the only people who can do that.
Yes.
Are there other companies that are doing that you know of that are competing with you, essentially replicating your service with their own proprietary methods?
There are some companies that, as you know, are editing DVDs and making copies of them.
Right.
There are companies that have talked about this about technology like ours.
And right.
But no one was actually willing to stand up to the studios and stand up to the kind of legal pressures that we did.
Well, now that
that's good for us. Now
right.
that the bill is passed,
right.
I think it's possible. Now the good news is we just had a patent issue actually today, May 3rd. Our first patent issued, so we have some IP protection and.
But you may be out of one legal woods to get into a new legal woods if people start trying to steal your patent, try to infringe your patents.
I think this is the kind of things that all businesses go through. The
okay.
good news is it's a terrific product. I mean,
right.
we get emails every day from customers that are tickled. I will tell you honestly, I've never seen the kind of passion for this product, for any other product, except maybe for TiVo.
Right.
I talk to TiVo users. And they are evangelists. You know, they say, I love my TiVo. In fact, it would be a lifestyle change for them to give it up. It's the same thing with ClearPlay. People tell us, this is the coolest thing ever.
Now, speaking of TiVo and how excited people are about it, can your technology be adapted to cut out commercials of on television programs?
Well, the legislation specifically prohibited that. I mean, the floor language in the legislation specifically prohibits that. And that's not on our agenda at all.
Okay. Comment as much as you'd like on how this fits into what's commonly called the culture war, and commonly called people who don't like what Hollywood's doing. How much was that what fueled your effort to do this, and what kind of an effect do you think that that the presence of ClearPlay in a lot of people's homes is going to have on that on those issues?
Well, I don't think necessarily we're driven by fighting the culture war.
Right.
We look and we see a dissatisfaction with the content that's out there. It's not. I mean, in many ways, movies are better than ever, right? They have bigger budgets, the special effects are better, the acting's wonderful, the direct, all those things. But what's worse and worse for many people, not for all, but for many people, is some of the content that's in it. And it's almost like for many movies, and I'm not talking just ours, I'm talking PG-13.
Right.
For many of these movies, it's like, you know, you can get one F-word in, and so you try to stick one in most romantic comedies. You know that you'll broaden your audience if you make it more adult. And I think people are just concerned about that.
Well, that's what I'd like to, if we could just sort of focus on that point. You said essentially that people, that studios want to add some of these aspects, which I refer to as gratuitous because they're not essential to the story, perhaps. But you're appealing to an audience that wants them out. You just said that the studios include that because they think it'll broaden their audience. But you're tapping a market that is being ignored or violated by their intended efforts to broaden their audience. What's the picture on that?
You know what? I don't think it always broadens our audience.
Okay.
I think in many cases it limits the audience.
Right.
I think that there's a lot of movies that if they would have been tamed down and particularly gotten a different rating,
right,
tamed down to say from Nardo PG-13, they'd have done much better at the box office.
So are you saying that it's possible that your technology is going to, just like the studios fought beta technology, VHS technology, they lost, they made lots of money as a result of having lost.
Do
you feel that you're also going to help sell more DVDs?
Oh, there's, without a doubt. There's no question we will broaden the market, and at no cost. The beauty of it for the studios is that we broaden the market at no cost to them. They don't have to do a thing.
Okay.
And we do the heavy lifting. We spend the money. They don't have to spend more money in post-production. They don't have to spend more money on versions and different SKUs and retail facings and all those things. We do that for them, and there's, without a doubt. Now, you can argue how much.
Right.
Is it going to broaden at 5%, 10%, 20%? And frankly, I don't know, but I don't think there's any question that, I mean, we hear from people every day that I am watching more movies now than I did before.
Okay. I wanted to get your comment on what seemed to me a kind of irony here. There's a intellectual theory from the French called deconstructionism, which holds that each person creates their own experience of a work of art through the interaction with it. And what you seem to have done here is provided a mechanical counterpart that literally creates an individual film for each person. And I'm wondering if you can see any irony there in the fact that the most elevated French intellectual philosophical theories have now been implemented in a way that uses the technology that exists.
Well, you know, I think my French philosophy is probably limited to Voltaire and maybe Sartre, but you know, we don't create a different film or a different version. What we do is we allow you in your home to experience the movie a little bit differently and maybe in a way that's more comfortable to you.
Do you think this is going to have any impact on people to the extent that what's shared, what's communal in the United States and around the world is the experience of art, culture, media, and people can say, you know, I saw this movie and remember where it does this and it does that, and people can communicate by making references to cultural artifacts such as films. When there are 16,000 different ways to look at a film, do you think that that's going to be reduced, and does that matter?
You know, I think it's already really exists out there. I mean, how many versions of movies are there now? Dozens. You know, there's television and there's network and cable and airline and there's a European and there's an Asian and there's a Saudi Arabian airline and there's a lot of different versions of movies that exist out there. There's director's cuts and things. So I don't know if there's a completely common experience. Is there, you know, will someone, I mean, I think, is it possible, I guess, that in talking about a movie, that someone that had seen it with ClearPlay may not have this exactly the same recollection of scenes as someone that didn't.
Right.
Yeah, that's possible. I think it's the same thing if you were watching on an airline.
Would
you say, though, at the end that, no, I hadn't seen the Titanic because I didn't see Kate Winslet's breasts? Well, no, but I may not be able to talk as eloquently about them.
Right, unless you see another movie. Has anyone mentioned the possibility of adapting your technology for use with e-books to create a sort of clear book as a brand extension of what you're doing with film now?
You know, we really haven't looked at that.
Okay. Would you be willing to?
I haven't thought about it.
Okay.
I really have never used e-books.
Right.
It sort of came and, I wouldn't say came and went, but
right.
I think it's not a technology that I grabbed onto.
Okay. Are you licensing your technology to other DVD manufacturers or any
yeah.
at all who want to do it?
Well, not necessarily any at all, but we have relationships with most major manufacturers, and I think that over time, when the time is right, you'll see ClearPlay in as a pretty common feature in devices that play movies.
There's been a big issue between a Blu-ray and HD and another format for the next generation of DVD players. Are you involved in those discussions at all, or are you going to be licensing your technology to either the separate Blu-ray and its competitor, or the combined system that's finally decided on, if there
well,
is one?
We're really agnostic on that. We can work with any of them.
You really wouldn't need to do much adaptation of your existing technology to work with any new generation.
No, I think anytime there's a new technology and new types of chips, I mean, it takes a little bit of adaptation on our part, but the core technology is the same.
Okay. Is ClearPlay privately held or publicly traded?
Privately held.
Is it going to stay that way, or?
Well, I think for the immediate future, I don't think we're at the stage where we would even discuss a public offering. I think we get a lot of interest on the acquisition side, and we're always talking to people, but I don't think the time is right. I think this is a company with a terrific future. All the data that we see points to demand in the U.S. alone of 40 to 50 million households. So we've got a long way to go before we get to those kinds of numbers, and I think selling too early is probably not in our best interest.
Okay. One big question, one little question, and then we're going to wrap up. What do you expect, if any, the impact on American society is going to be of the widespread use of ClearPlay?
You know, I really couldn't comment on that. I don't know. I mean, I do know this, that people tell us that the impact on their family is a very positive one. And that I hear. I'm not sure how that rolls up into society, but I will tell you, if watching with ClearPlay makes a parent's job easier, if somehow we keep some of our kids, a little less exposed to things that they might find enticing or alluring, or if we make parent moms and dads' job easier and make the home a little comfortable, well, we feel pretty good about that. And if we manage to make money along the way, I guess that's pretty nice, too.
Okay. The last question has to do with your own viewing habits. Do you watch your DVDs straight, or do you use ClearPlay?
I think it depends. It depends on, typically, because I'm always interested in the product, if there's a ClearPlay filter for it, I'll watch with ClearPlay, only because I like to see how our product works. And,
right.
And frankly, I prefer most of my movies that way. I can't think of any that I'd... that I want to watch without ClearPlay. Yeah. But I watch movies all the time. I mean, I love movies and love classic movies. And this past 2 weeks, I've watched International House and W.C. Fields. And the other night, I watched Splendor in the Grass with Warren Beatty and Natalie Wood. So neither of those have ClearPlay filters, but they were terrific.
Is your company going to go back through Hollywood history and develop filters for classic films from the beginning of Hollywood till the present?
Well, I don't think most of them, most of the older films done before, say, the late 60s,
right.
I doubt it. I think you look at the... You didn't really start seeing the inclusion of edgy content into family movies until you got into the 60s. I think when you saw movies like Midnight Cowboy and movies like that became popular, as opposed to previously The Sound of Music.
What about Gone with the Wind? What about with that famous line there at the end?
Yeah, that's a funny one, isn't it? That's here's my response to that. If you watch Gone with the Wind and you decide that you want to hear it without DAM,
right.
That's your right.
And is there a clear play filter to do that?
Honestly, I have to go back and look. I'm not sure if we have one or not.
There's also a scene where Clark Gable takes Vivian Leigh up the stairs, and she comes back a changed woman. Would people excise that, and it would render
the beauty of it. I'll tell you, I saw this just the other night on Splendor in the Grass.
Right.
Warren Beatty is off with the. With the local high school tramp,
right?
And they're in the waterfall, and they're sort of kissing, and then you go to the next day, and you see all the hushed looks in the school and things, and you know, but I mean, I didn't have to see them to do the dirty deed.
In fact, what you're saying is that it was implicit in the movie without a filter. It was
exactly.
implicit.
It was implicit, but I didn't have to see the graph. I didn't have to rub my nose in it, and so. For me, I understood it, and I'm a mature adult. You know, somebody younger may have drawn other conclusions, but it's really hard to draw your own conclusions based upon your maturity level with today's movies because they're so explicit. I mean, it's hard to watch these movies and not have if you've got a 13 or 12-year-old or 13-year-old and say, oh, I know what they're doing. You know, they're under the covers, and oh, that's how that works, and this is what I see, and okay, it's sort of shaded, and you know.
So in a way. A clear play filtered movie is rather than dumbing down is smartening up the job of the viewer in a way.
Well, I don't know if I would say. I'm not sure I would say that.
I think
it leaves more to the imagination.
Okay.
And that's what the classic. That's what the great movies used to do.
Why don't you wrap up with this final question as to the competing rights of directors and studios, but particularly directors. To have their work seen as they intend it versus the competing right of viewers to view art as they prefer to view it.
Well, you know, somewhere along the way, the directors became rock stars, and they wanted rock star treatment. And there's a lot of artists that have their work in movies that don't get the same rights that these directors are demanding. Tell me, what's the director's sacred right, or what's the director's sacred responsibility to the artistic rights of the screenwriter?
Right. Well,
basically, they can chop it up in a little piece if they want. When they buy a book, they buy the book rights. Do they have this great respect for the author of the book? No, I mean, the authors are oftentimes, angry of what they've done to the art. But the directors don't seem to care about those rights. They buy the music, they get the legal rights to do it, they'll cut the actors' parts, they'll cut pieces out entirely. None of these artists seem to have any rights in the director's mind except the director. And the director stands up and says, I am all-powerful, and you must watch the movie my way. I don't buy that.
So in fact... To revert finally again to the language of the French deconstructionist, you want to privilege the viewer over the director.
Well, I think certainly in the living room, in my home with my family in my living room, it's my right to watch that movie or experience any media any way that I want. If I choose to skip a page of a book when I'm reading it, I can do that. If I choose to have a bust of Mozart and put a hat on it, I can do that. And if I choose to watch a movie and watch it with picture-in-picture or get up and make popcorn in the middle or watch it skipping the F-words, those are all my rights and my family. And I think it's really absurd for a director to think that as long as we don't alter that work or resell it in any way, that their rights extend into the living room. I don't think anybody believes that. I don't think anybody I don't think that will fly with any faction of our society outside of Hollywood.
I want to thank you for explaining all this to us today on Utopia Media's Entertainment Technology World, and thank you very much for talking to us.
Well, Mark, thanks for having me, and I think your site's terrific, and I appreciate being on.
Okay, thanks a lot. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.